Members, I would like to call the meeting to order. Please silence all electronic devices. Lindsay, please call the roll.
Chair Grawl.
Present.
Vice Chair Byrd. Republican Whip Gregory.
Here.
Ranking Member Driscoll.
Here.
Representatives Alexander. Beltran.
Here.
Brannon.
Here.
Bousada Cabrera. Diamond. Duggan.
Here.
Fernandez Barquin. Fetterhoff. Gottlieb. Grieco.
Here.
Hart.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Plakin. Roach. Salzman.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Trunell.
Let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Welcome back, members. Today we have four bills for consideration on the agenda. First, we will hear CS for HB 379 by Representative Cheney. Representative Cheney, you're recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing my bill. This bill creates two new crimes with the goal of distinguishing intentionally touching another person on the breast, buttocks, genitals from a misdemeanor battery, like throwing a glass of water in someone's face. The first criminal offense that this bill creates, indecent battery, intentionally touching a person 16 or older against his or her will on the breast, genitals, buttocks, or on the clothing covering them, or forcing a person 16 or older to touch the perpetrator in the same way. A first offense for indecent battery is a first-degree misdemeanor, and a second or subsequent offense of indecent battery is a third-degree felony. Second criminal offense this bill creates is lewd or lascivious touching of certain minors. Persons 24 of age or older intentionally touches a 16 or 17-year-old in a lewd or lascivious manner on the breast, genitals, buttocks, or clothing covering them, forces or entices 16 or 17-year-old to touch the perpetrator in the same way. Lewd or lascivious touching of certain minors is a third-degree felony and is ranked as a level 4 on the offense severity ranking chart. Under the bill, a person convicted of this offense is required to register as a sex offender. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Having explained the bill, members, are there questions? Seeing no questions, we have an amendment. Amendment barcode 213067. By Representative Brannon. Representative Brannon, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment removes the crime of indecent battery from the bill. The conduct captured under the indecent battery crime section is already punishable as simple battery in Florida, and the bill assigns the same penalty for this new offense. So the bill does not increase penalties for unwanted touching of private parts. It simply renames the crime. The amendment keeps the elements and criminal penalty for lewd and lascivious touching of minors the same as are currently in the bill, but moves the crime to a new section of law so that an offender will not be required to register as a sexual offender upon conviction. This change is being made in an attempt to compromise with parties who are concerned about the requirement of sexual offender registration. What the amendment does, basically, if a person commits indecent, lewd, or lascivious touching of minors, it will be a third-degree felony, ranked as a level 4 offense on the offense severity ranking chart. If the person is 24 years of age or older when he or she intentionally touches a 16 or 17-year-old person, regardless of whether the 16 or 17-year-old consents in a lewd or lascivious manner on the breast, genitals, genital area, or buttocks, or the clothing covering them, or forces a 16 or 17-year-old person to so touch the perpetrator. Now, I know that's confusing, so let me try to give it to you in terms that's maybe a little more understandable. I had a case a few years back where a 16-year-old girl, on her birthday, was picked up by a 65-year-old gentleman. He took her to a wooded area, parked, and committed lewd and lascivious assault upon her. Being a younger deputy and not being as knowledgeable as I am now, I charged him with lewd and lascivious assault. The next day, the state attorney's office dropped that charge to misdemeanor battery because it was her 16th birthday. So there is a gap in the law where those 24 or older can commit those crimes upon 16 or 17-year-olds and be charged with nothing but a misdemeanor. What we are trying to do here is make sure that those individuals are charged with a felony. And to show you how serious that was, that individual who was 65 years old who had committed that crime upon that 16-year-old girl on her birthday. Later on, of course, he got down to the courthouse as quick as he could and pled to simple battery because he knew he was very fortunate that that was her birthday, because had he done it a day before, he would have been charged with a much more serious crime. But later on, he became a school crossing guard. And for some reason, that has been stuck in my throat for years. So that's what we're trying to address here with this amendment. Thank you.
Are there questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, there is no public testimony on the amendment. Members were in debate on the amendment. Representative Gottlieb in debate.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say I appreciate the amendment. I think it gets the bill into a much better posture. I've made my voice, I think, loud and clear in prior committees. I know that Rep. Cheney's doing one heck of a job trying to carry this bill and get it to where it needs to be. I don't think that does it, so I'm going to have a protest no vote down, but I like the direction we're going. I think that we're still leaving a group that is unprotected from this kind of touching, and that's individuals over the age of 17 from a non-consensual touching. I hope that next year that we can get there. So I support the concept. I support everything you're doing, and I really appreciate Chair Brannon's bringing this, but I just don't think it's goes far enough. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Additional debate on the amendment, members? Seeing no additional debate on the amendment, Representative Brannon, you are recognized to close on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Representative Gottlieb's comments. We have involved ourselves in many discussions in the many different forms this legislation has taken, and I encourage you to file that as a standalone bill next year. I think it's a much-needed change in the law, but I think this bill that we're talking about today needs to be more narrow. And I'll close by saying I meant to say stuck in my craw, not in my throat. I don't know why I couldn't think of that word. Thank you.
Having closed on the amendment, all those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying yay. Yay. Opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. There is no public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Is there any additional debate? Seeing no additional debate, Representative Cheney, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill has been discussed extensively with prosecuting attorneys, defense attorneys, sheriff's offices, and it hasn't been easy trying to come to a consensus, but we feel that we've gotten as close as we can this session, and I appreciate Rep. Gottlieb's comments and do encourage you to continue to pursue your concepts. And for this session, this is our bill.
Having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll.
Representatives Alexander.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Brannon.
Yes.
Lusada Cabrera.
Yes.
Bird.
Yes.
Diamond.
Yes.
Driscoll.
Yes.
Duggan.
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin.
Yes.
Fetterhoff.
Yes.
Gottlieb.
No.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Plakin? Yes. Roach? Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Trunell? Chair Grawl?
Yes.
18 yeas, one nay, Madam Chair.
Members, by your vote, the bill will be reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Cheney.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear CS for HB 1453 by Representative Harding. Representative Harding, you are recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Great to be back in front of you all. CS for HB 1453 amends Chapter 775, 784, 827, and 847 of Florida Statute and creates new sections of law in Chapter 836 of Florida Statute to address the issues that have emerged as a result of rapidly advancing audiovisual technology. Specifically, the bill makes the following changes, and there's six different sections. Altered sexual depictions or deep fakes. This bill prohibits a person from willfully and maliciously promoting an altered sexual depiction of an identifiable person without the consent of the identifiable person, when the person promoting the image knows or reasonably should have known that the image was an altered sexual depiction. A person who unlawfully promotes an altered sexual depiction commits a third-degree felony ranked as a level 3 offense on the Criminal Punishment Code of Offense Severity Ranking Chart, or OSRC. Relating to sexually explicit images, under this bill, a person commits a third-degree felony ranked as a level 4 offense on the OSRC when he or she willfully obtains with the intent to promote a sexually explicit image of an identifiable person without the identifiable person's authorization. Under the section of child pornography and obscenity, this bill ensures that more child pornography is prohibited in Florida by expanding the meaning of the term child pornography to include any image that has been created, altered, adapted, or modified by electronic, mechanical, or other means to portray an identifiable minor engaged in sexual conduct, and defining or redefining multiple terms related to child pornography and obscenity. Sexual cyber harassment means to publish to an internet website or disseminate through electronic means to another person a sexually explicit image of a person that it contains or conveys the personal identification information of the depicted person without the depicted person's consent. The bill increases the minimum monetary damages that a victim may receive as a result of civil action from $5,000 to $10,000. And under the last section of the underlying bill, childlike sex dolls. Under current law, possession of an obscene childlike sex doll is a first-degree misdemeanor for first offense and a third-degree felony for a second or subsequent offense. The bill increases the penalty for possessing an obscene childlike sex doll to provide that any offense is punishable as a third-degree felony. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Having explained the bill, members, are there questions on the bill? Representative Grieco on questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this good bill. I do have some questions, though, about what is colloquially termed the revenge porn. How does this strengthen the state's current revenge porn laws? As it's my understanding that currently the revenge porn laws, they only are really triggered if somebody uploads an image to a website. But it doesn't affect somebody if, say, they obtain a photograph or video and they send it to other people. So can you speak to that piece of it?
You're recognized.
So thank you, Madam Chair. So within this bill, if they obtain that photo with the intent to distribute it, do harm, either monetary or to do harm to a person, that would be covered under this bill. And that would expand, I think, what you're alluding to.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Additional questions, members? Seeing no additional questions, we do have amendments. Amendment barcode 401667 by Representative Harding. Representative Harding, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment revises the elements of the offenses relating to sexually explicit images to ensure that the crimes are not overbroad and are distinguishable from the current crime of sexual cyber harassment as follows: prohibits theft of a sexually explicit image rather than just obtaining the image without consent, punishable as a third-degree felony. This offense covers a scenario in which a person steals a sexually explicit image intending to post, publish, or disseminate that image. This requires a person to willfully possess a sexually explicit image with the intent to promote the image or for financial gain or other reasons when he or she knows or reasonably should have known that the image was stolen, punishable as a third-degree felony. And then the last section requires a person to willfully promote a sexually explicit image for financial gain or other reasons when he or she should know reasonably should have known that the image was stolen, and that is a second-degree felony as well. And I think it's important to just mention this amendment is because of the concern that there could be possible that someone we wanted to make it really clear of who we're going after, and that's someone that intends to do harm. That takes that image and kind of in that questioning with Representative Grieco, where someone would take an image in some way, whether they steal it or in some other fashion with intent to do harm. And this amendment seeks to make that clear.
Having explained the amendment, members, are there questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions on the amendment, do we have any public testimony? No public testimony on the amendment. Members, were in debate on the amendment. Seeing no debate, you are recognized to close.
Wave close.
Having waived close on the amendment, all those in favor of the adoption of the amendment indicate by saying yay. Yay. Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We are on amendment barcode 691705 by Representative Harding. Representative Harding, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is simply just a technical amendment to make conforming changes to the new crimes listed, and that is the amendment.
Are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions, having no public testimony on the amendment, any debate on the amendment? No debate. You're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close.
Having waived close on the amendment, all those in favor of the adoption of the amendment indicate by saying yay. Yay. Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. Is there public testimony? With no public testimony, members, we're in debate on the bill as amended. Seeing no debate, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would typically waive close. This is an important issue and appreciate you bearing with me on the long open. But it is important that we make really clear what we are going after, and that is that in Florida, we want to ensure that we are on the forefront of understanding that as technology changes, criminals and people that intend to do harm get smarter. And it's important that we update Florida law to ensure that we're not going to allow someone to target folks to do harm and using technology to further that endeavor. And I would ask for your favorable support.
Having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll.
Representatives Alexander?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brannon? Busada Cabrera? Yes. Bird? Yes. Diamond?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Plakin? Roach?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Trunell? Chair Grawl?
Yes.
19 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
By your vote, the bill will be reported favorably. Thank you, Representative Harding. Members, next we'll take up PCS for CS for CS for HB 1203 by Representative Fetterhoff. Representative Fetterhoff, you're recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 1203 includes the following. It incorporates recommendations from a recent audit of Florida's Teacher Preparation Program Accountability System, requiring programs to teach strategies supporting evidence-based grading practices, streamlining the criteria for continued approval of teacher prep programs to focus on candidate readiness and placement in critical shortage areas, provides that school district performance evaluation procedures are not a mandatory subject of collective bargaining, and may be changed by a school district, specifically that the district school superintendent shall establish procedures for evaluating the performance of duties and responsibilities of all instructional, administrative, and supervisory personnel employed by the school district. Specifies employee background screening responsibilities for charter and alternative schools, allows charter and alternative schools to file fingerprints and pay background screening fees directly to the Department of Law Enforcement, and establishes a criminal penalty for individuals who knowingly fail to report sexual misconduct by a school authority figure. The PCS also makes the following changes: clarifies what sexual misconduct means for purposes of the criminal penalty established by the bill, requires that school districts include compensation for longevity of service in calculating salary adjustments for employees on the grandfathered salary schedule, and authorizes members of the legislature to visit any public school in the legislative district of the member, consistent with requirements for members of school district and charter school boards. In addition, in order to permit educational entities in Florida to share background screening information and streamline the screening process for individuals working in Florida schools, the PCS also requires educational entities to use the AHCA provider background screening clearinghouse to conduct background screenings and provides a timeline for transitioning to the clearinghouse by June 30th, 2026, based on when an individual would already be required to rescreen. Further improves the background screening process and heightens protections for students by aligning disqualifying offenses of educational personnel with the requirements of other individuals who have access to children or other vulnerable populations, and clarifies that educational entities are authorized to receive information on sealed and expunged records for the sole purpose of employment screening, and that is the PCS, Chair.
Members, are there questions? Representative Driscoll, any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to talk a little bit about the collective bargaining piece. Does the language in your bill allow the supermajority of school districts and unions that have collaborative relationships to continue bargaining over their evaluation systems? or would collaboration be a violation under your bill if it passed into law?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, they would be able to continue to collaborate.
Okay. Additional questions? Representative Driscoll.
Yep. Thank you. Because it was a little, I'm asking because it was a little confusing to me, because it looks like under the bill, the language says that collective bargaining is prohibited. So it doesn't change a mandatory subject of bargaining to a management right or a prohibited subject of bargaining.
Representative Federoff.
And I'm looking around lines 936 through 940.
As my understanding is that the district should not be required to use the teacher evaluations in the collective bargaining portion of it. That's what we're trying to alleviate there.
Additional question, you recognize?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So under current law and I think some recent rulings related to the subject stated that neither the public employer nor the employee organization could be compelled to agree to a proposal or required to make a concession unless otherwise provided by law. Under your bill, do you see or agree or think that if it was passed, it's kind of asking teachers to accept a concession that didn't exist before the bill?
You recognize.
So currently, and what we're staying with here is that the school district is required to make the teacher evaluation policy, and that's what we're trying to stay aligned with without bringing that into the collective bargaining argument. And so we want the districts to still continue being able to do the collective bargaining as far as wages and work conditions and so on, but not bring the teacher evaluation into that process, as we've seen that it has brought districts into an impasse and not being able to move forward with their other collective bargaining issues.
Okay.
Representative Learned. Oh, sorry. Representative Driscoll. I'm sorry. I didn't realize you had more. Go ahead, Representative
That's okay.
Driscoll.
Maybe I'll ask it. I know you don't like to come back. I don't want to.
It's okay. No, if you want to go ahead. We have time. So if you have questions, we will stay with you.
All right. Is there currently a process for a school district to impose or unilaterally change evaluation systems that the union doesn't agree with?
You're recognized.
Currently, school districts are in charge of dealing with the teacher evaluation systems, and they do not have to refer to the unions in order to make those teacher evaluation changes. They do have the option to have the unions come in and talk with them about that. They can advise them on that, but currently the school districts are the ones that deal with how the teacher evaluation systems are structured.
Okay.
Representative Driscoll, additional questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. So I know in the staff analysis, it talked about a ruling, a PERC ruling, P-E-R-C, and I'm just curious because as I look at your bill, it seems like it's going to basically override that ruling as it previously existed. Is that the intent of the bill, to override that ruling?
You're recognized, Representative Federoff.
Essentially, the PERC ruling came through, and it is saying that the teacher evaluations should be considered part of the collective bargaining because there is not clarification from the legislature, and so what we're doing is providing clarification.
Okay. Additional question? Representative Learned, and questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the bill. I'm kind of confused by lines 681 through 684. Which seems to be at the end of a paragraph about salary supplements for additional academic responsibilities. And the way I'm reading this, it looks like this is preventing school districts from being able to pay compensation for longevity of service. And I just wanted to ask, is that the intent, or am I misreading this somehow?
You recognize Representative Federoff.
As I understand it, it doesn't prohibit it. What it does is it makes sure that that is part of the calculation process. So it includes that in the calculation process when they're looking at the adjustments.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's interesting. So it's saying that any compensation for longevity of service awarded must be included in calculating salary adjustments to subparagraph B. Subparagraph B is all about performance pay incentives. So are you somehow saying that you can only pay longevity of service bonuses if it's tied to incentive pays, or that you can't do it unless they are getting these other incentive pays?
You're recognized, Representative Federoff.
Thank you, Chair. So it is basically keeping it so that they're on par. So basically, the grandfathered individuals are on par with those that are receiving an adjustment according to their performance pay. So we're just making sure the calculations run parallel, essentially.
Additional question, Representative Lawton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if they're running parallel and if they're somehow tied together, does that mean that you can only get one or the other? Can you not be both a good teacher and somebody getting longevity of service?
You recognize Representative Federoff.
So it's preserving, hold on, trying to get a better explanation for you here. So it is preserving the 25% greater than the highest annual salary adjustment that's currently part of the grandfather, individuals that are under the grandfather clause.
Representative Lerner, do you recognize?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think what I'm hearing you say is there's no intent here to prevent districts from paying longevity pay to teachers. Is that accurate?
You're recognized.
So performance is part of both, and so they're, I'm trying to explain this in a way that makes sense, but hold on. Repeat your question. Let me make sure I'm getting clarity on this.
Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. I think the question is, so based on your answer to the last couple questions, I think what I'm hearing you say is that it is not the intent of this bill to prevent longevity pay from being used to, preventing districts from being able to use longevity pay to pay their teachers to attract, to retain our best teachers. Is that accurate?
You're recognized.
That would be accurate.
Representative Lerner, additional questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. And last question on this, I think. So the House budget has a, at least from what I understand, talking to the chair, had a 50-50 split for teacher salary allocation, basically trying to recognize the fact that we want, you know, the governor had his proposal last year for the $47,500 starting pay for teachers, but that wasn't really being matched with some of our most senior folks in the field. And being a small business owner who frankly hires a lot of teachers, you know, some of the people later in their career can make a lot more than that. This bill doesn't change that as a goal of our budget that we heard presented on the floor in that teacher salary allocation, does it?
You're correct.
Thank you. Representative Harten, questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative, I want to make sure I understand that legislators, we can go into any public school within our district. Can we go to public schools outside of our district?
You're recognized.
The bill doesn't speak to that, so I would say that if it was a school outside your district, because it doesn't speak to that, you would be able to make that visit.
So
you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But this does prohibit me from going to schools in my district that are not public schools. Is that correct?
No, not at all. Chair. This opens it up to being able to make those visits to your schools and your district.
Okay.
Additional questions?
Yes, I have one more. I'm just trying to figure out, will this bill disrupt relationships and structures since the majority of our school districts have used collective bargaining to develop an evaluation system that is fair and identifies teachers' strengths and weaknesses? Is that going to change this with this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So what I would say is that school districts are communicating with the unions and with the teachers on teacher evaluation. We are not taking that away from them. We're not prohibiting that at all. They can continue to have those conversations. All we are trying to do here is say that they can't use this as a bargaining chip when they're doing collective bargaining and hold up the process in order to get something specific in the teacher evaluation.
Okay. Additional question. Representative Gottlieb and questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question was essentially asked similar to that last question, but if the PERC ruling said that the legislature needs to make the decision as to whether or not the evaluation should or should not be included in the collective bargaining, why are we making the decision not to include them when a supermajority of the school districts do use them for evaluation purposes and to aid in the collective bargaining system?
You're recognized.
So we've had issues with school districts and unions getting to a point of impasse. There, one in particular has been at an impasse since 2018 and being able to move forward with their collective bargaining on the teacher evaluation specific issue. And so I would say that having this as a part of it not only is holding up the collective bargaining process, but it's also holding up our school district's ability to make changes to the teacher evaluation, which is harming our teachers and our students by not allowing them to make changes and update their teacher evaluation process because it's now part of the collective bargaining process. So I would say we're actually harming our process by including it in the collective bargaining.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Doesn't the new procedure that's outlined, as I understand it, that the procedures established by the district superintendent give too much power to that one individual, the school superintendent?
You're recognized.
So while the teacher evaluations would be designed by the superintendent in the school district, I don't think that that individual is necessarily going to get power hungry and change the teacher evaluation to a point that would be unacceptable. And the teachers still do have a say in the teacher evaluation process. They can voice their opinion on if there need to be changes, and the unions can have their say as well. We're just saying it's not part of that collective bargaining process.
Representative Driscoll, questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going back to some of the questions about collective bargaining, so as I read the bill, it specifies that instructional evaluation procedures are not subject to mandatory collective bargaining and thus may be unilaterally changed by a school district. Am I reading that correctly?
You're recognized.
That is correct.
Additional question?
So I guess one of the challenges is that because current law states that all personnel being evaluated must be fully informed of the criteria, the data sources, methodologies, and procedures before their evaluation takes place. So do you believe that teachers or their representatives should have input into the process?
You recognize Representative Federal.
I do believe they should have input into the process. What we're trying to do is prevent this being part of the collective bargaining and thereby causing an impasse where you can't make changes at all to teacher evaluation because everything's being held up. And we're seeing this in several districts in the state of Florida.
Additional questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Rep. Learnett may have been getting at this with some of his questions, but in case I missed it, so does the language of your bill restrict how much a school district could compensate its teachers?
Recognized.
Not at all.
Additional question, Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And does this language conflict with the House's budget proposal and priority of a 50-50 split of the teacher salary allocation to raise beginning teacher pay and also allow for the fair compensation of experienced teachers?
No, it does not.
Additional questions? Seeing no additional questions, we have public testimony. Russell Brown, Freedom Foundation. The proponent of the bill. Eric Rodriguez. You're recognized, Mr. Rodriguez. On deck is Arlene Daniels. You're recognized.
Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Eric Rodriguez. I have taught primarily at the high school level in both North and South Florida for the past 29 years. I currently reside in Live Oak in Representative Brannon's district. Florida ranks near the bottom in average teacher pay. We can't have the best schools in the nation while paying the teachers among the lowest in the country. This bill will make it harder for school districts to pay veterans like me a competitive salary. The language added to this bill last night will increase Florida's massive teacher shortage. This bill would further complicate our already complicated pay system. I've been in this system for 29 years. It's a complicated pay system. Please oppose House Bill 1203. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Arlene Daniels, Palm Beach County Classroom Teacher Association. On deck is Cicely Henderson. You're recognized.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Arlene Daniels, and I teach sixth grade world history at Lakeshore Middle School, Belgrade, Florida. Most of Floridians agree that we want our schools to be the strongest in the nation. To reach that goal, Florida must focus on retaining experienced educators like myself. This bill does the exact opposite. By adding one more restriction to the 20 rules and laws that are already in place regarding teacher salary, this bill will make it harder for schools, districts to pay their experienced educators like myself a competitive salary. Make no mistake about it. The language added to this bill last night will increase teacher shortage. I'm going to say that one more time. It will increase teacher shortage. Please oppose this bill.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Cicely Henderson, Palm Beach County Classroom Teacher Association. On deck, Jean Eckhoff. You're recognized.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Cicely Henderson. I also teach at Lakeshore Middle School in Belgrade, eighth grade mathematics. I love my job. I love my students. Teaching has been my career for the last 20 years. As you know, Florida is 50th in the nation in teacher pay. It didn't used to be this way. We was recently in 2007, we ranked in nation 28th. It wasn't the best, but it was half. We was almost there. But in the past decade and a half, while teacher salaries have rules, laws regulating teacher pay have exploded. There are now 20 different state regulations on teacher salary. And late last night, yet another was proposed with new texts added to the bill. The surest way to ensure teachers have competitive salaries, again, is for Tallahassee to get out of the way. Stop burdening teachers with even more regulations on how we get paid for our professional experience. Please oppose this bill.
Thank you for being here. Next, we'll hear from Jean Eckhoff. And on deck is Alexis Underwood. Ms. Eckhoff, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Grawl. Good afternoon, and thank you for your time. My name is Jean Eckhoff, and I'm a teacher from Live Oak, Florida, Rep. Brannon's district, and I have 19 years' experience teaching. I have a professional contract. I have three subject area endorsements. I have three subject area certifications, two endorsements, thousands of hours of professional development, and all of that experience with kids. And unfortunately, I make the same salary as a first-year teacher with no experience and no certification about that. I haven't checked my, pay stub in a while. Florida's already approaching a teacher shortage crisis. Next year, we anticipate 9,000 more vacancies as more teachers leave the profession. Part of this is due to compensation. Florida's near the bottom in the nation in terms of pay. We have among the most complicated laws that determine how we're compensated. Nobody understands it, including me, or I talk to people in HR. Nobody knows. Nobody seems to be able to understand it. It sounds to me that HB 1203 is going to add more complications to an already elaborate process. More regulation will drive away even more teachers. Please oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next, we'll hear from Alexis Underwood with the FEA. Welcome. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Grawl, members of the committee. Thank you for hosting me today. I am Alexis Underwood. I am a former Marine and what we call a custodial grandmother, one of hundreds of thousands of grandparents raising a child here in Florida. I teach at Mowat Middle School in Panama City, Florida, Mighty Mustang, sixth and seventh grade language arts for kids with emotional and behavioral disabilities. And I beg you to oppose this bill. I know it is not your intent to drive those of us with gray hairs and wrinkles and experience out of the business. I would just submit to you that experienced educators are a necessary component of a well-run system, in the same way that when I went to boot camp in the Marine Corps, my drill instructors were not privates. They were warriors with experience in the Corps who knew how to teach me, as a recruit, how to be a good Marine. When I came to work in a school system 19 years ago as a career changer and I asked for a mentor, I didn't walk down the hall and find somebody else who was a first-year teacher. I asked for someone who had been doing the job for at least 15, 20 years because they knew what I didn't even know enough to ask. A good system is one that has all. Now, I've never looked it up, but my guess is going to be, by looking at the way Representative Grawl has run this meeting, that it's not your first rodeo, and you're not a first-term representative. There is a place in all of our systems for both newbies and experienced. I don't believe it's your intention to drive experienced educators out of education, but sometimes the unintended consequences overwhelm our good intentions. Unintended consequences. You need those of us who have gray hairs and wrinkles and more than 15 years of experience because we are the backbone of education. We run the committees. We run the IEPs. We are the ones who've seen every trick a sixth grader can pull out of their butt twice. Twice. I've seen that trick. Please, please vote against 1203. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Shan Goff, Foundation for Florida's Future, waves in support. Scott Mazur, representing himself. You're recognized. On deck is Heather Garcia. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Grawl, committee members. My name is Scott Mazur. I've been a public educator for 23 years, primarily in fifth grade math and science. Perfect VAM teacher, nationally board certified. So part of the reason why I'm here and I was not actually able to concentrate on my classroom as much was because of pay and was because of recognition. And that's why I became vocal and involved in the process to kind of learn more about it. It's true. The enthusiasm of our young teachers is vital, but the experience of our veteran teachers is also. I know that when my mom was a teacher, first grade, I told her when I was going into the classroom, I was going to change the world. And then I was going to be the best teacher that first year. 5 years later, I went back and I said, there was a little bit of learning that needed to be done. And even until about my 15th year, did I understand a lot of the things about managing a classroom and getting parent involvement and all the things, the little things that make the classroom run so smoothly to where it doesn't look like it's difficult. You know, like those athletes that do something that you're like, oh, anyone can do that. But it's supposed to be made look effortless. So because of that, I ask you to oppose House Bill 1203.
Thank you for being here. Heather Garcia, and on deck, Michael Monroe. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Grawl and committee members. I am Heather Garcia, and I'm a media specialist here in Tallahassee, Florida. I love my job. I adore my students. Teaching is my career, and there's nothing that I would rather do, but it's becoming increasingly more difficult to pay our mortgage. Late yesterday, a provision was added to this bill that will make it even more difficult for my school district to pay experienced educators what they are worth. Parents want their children to have professionally trained, experienced teachers. No parent or educator has asked Tallahassee to place even more restrictions on how teachers are paid. I am a veteran teacher in my 20th year. I'm in my 45th year of learning. Please oppose this bill and focus on fixing teacher shortage instead of making it worse. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Michael Monroe with the FEA. You're recognized, Mr. Monroe.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Michael Monroe with the Florida Education Association. Want to address two provisions of this bill, one dealing with longevity pay. The way the measure is currently written, it implies that districts and unions do not have the ability to raise teacher salaries with experience based on, and it complicates our ability to recruit and retain. If you look at the language, it talks about subparagraph B. That language speaks to that a highly effective teacher must be paid at least 25% or greater of annual salary when it comes to an adjustment. And for an effective teacher, it can't be, it has to be equal to 50% and no more than 75%. That limits how much a teacher can be paid based on longevity or experience. That's a change in the current collective bargaining and the current process. Our second concern is related to limiting our ability related to teacher evaluations. The language is confusing the way it's currently written. It suggests that what is currently a mandatory subject of bargaining, because being a mandatory subject of bargaining, it deals with salaries, terms, and conditions of employment. Evaluations are tied to performance. That's terms and conditions. This language changes that and makes it either a prohibited subject of bargaining. If you read the language, it says collective bargaining under 447-209 is prohibited, or it makes it a mandatory or a management right. Management continues to set the standards. It can't be both. It can't be prohibited and then suggest that we can negotiate it. Either you can negotiate it or you can't. We have concerns with that. As previous speakers have suggested, we also have concerns that this bill hampers our ability to recruit and retain high-quality teachers in the state of Florida. And for those reasons, FEA opposes this bill.
Thank you for being here. Next, we have Robert Chapman, who waves in opposition. Jonah Mundy. And on, let me see, also waving in opposition is Patrick Strong, presenting himself. And after Jonah Mundy, we have Martina Taylor. You're recognized, Mr. Mundy.
Good afternoon, Chair Grawl and committee members. My name is Jonah Mundy. I'm a world history teacher and AP US history teacher right here in Tallahassee at Childs High School. Florida ranks near the bottom in teacher pay. And, you know, it didn't always have to be that way. I'm a beginning teacher. I'm trying to become a lifelong educator, trying to make a career. And I'm trying to support my family. And I want to be able to do that in the state of Florida because this is my home. This is where I was born and raised. And teachers aren't greedy. You know, if we're all in it for the money, let's be frank, we would not be here in education. We do it for the children and to share our love of knowledge and build a more knowledgeable and make society better in a small way. So, frankly, I would just humbly request that you could oppose this bill and give teachers the tools we need to better educate children here in Florida. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next, we'll hear from Martina Taylor. You're recognized, Ms. Taylor.
Good afternoon, Chair Grawl and committee members. I'm Martina Taylor, and I've been teaching mathematics at Leon High School here in Tallahassee for the past 18 years. We want the best for our students, which means we want to offer them the most qualified educators possible. In order to do this, we must retain experienced teachers like myself, and this bill does the opposite. It makes it more challenging for our school districts to offer competitive salaries and keep us from leaving the profession and sharing our talents elsewhere. In an effort to combat this teacher shortage we are truly experiencing right now, please oppose House Bill 1203.
Thank you for being here. Members, we are in debate. Members wishing to debate. Representative Gottlieb in debate.
So I've heard what some of the teachers have said, and I decided to look it up. And they're correct. The National Education Association said that Florida is the bottom of the country for teacher salaries for experienced teachers. Its starting salaries are in the middle of the pack. Even though we've had some increases, Florida ranked 30th in the nation for average starting salary for the 2019-2020 year. Evaluations equal performance, which is an incentive. And I think that if you look at the language of the bill, where it says that the procedures established by the district school superintendent set the standards of service to be offered, that means the superintendent can take out the evaluations. And What I'm hearing is that there's, you know, there's one place that the evaluations are holding up the collective bargaining. Well, that's probably because something's not fair. If it were fair, both sides would come to an agreement. So, you know, I think we should legislate for the rule, not the exception. And I think that, you know, if Florida's to lead, we shouldn't be at the bottom of the pack. We have the money. We should pay the teachers what they deserve. It's a noble profession. And I recall being a young lawyer, being a public defender, being a true believer in the system, but I left because I couldn't make the money. I don't know how these individuals stay at the jobs they do and teach our kids in the public school system, yet they're underpaid and underappreciated. And I think it's time that we show them that we appreciate them and we pay them what they're worth. And I think this bill does an injustice to the public school teachers, and we're defunding public schools, and I can't support it.
Representative Grieco in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And because of the committees, I sit on six committees, and because of the committees I sit on, I don't get to see a lot of education bills through the committee process. So this is a unique experience for me. But in my 4 years in the Florida House, whenever I see these kind of freestanding education bills, whether they address teachers, collective bargaining, funding, teacher pay, I feel like they all go in the wrong direction. And it's something that I just don't understand. I don't know what problem we're really trying to solve, which is what I thought the whole part of the legislative process is to solve problems, to make things better for Floridians. And this just goes in the pile of going in the wrong direction on multiple levels, not just with collective bargaining, but just with funding and everything that goes into it. It's somewhat of a complicated bill, but I'm going to be down on it, and I could give 100 reasons why. But this is another one of these I don't get it moments. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Roach in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Federhoff, for the bill. I just want to thank the educators who came up and spoke. You know, I've said this consistently in committee and in public back home when I'm speaking. You know, Florida does a lot of things well. One thing we do not do well is pay our public employees, whether it's teachers, firefighters, teachers, or I would even add state legislators and the cabinet officials, including the governor, a salary that represents the job that they do. And I think when you look at Florida as ranked to other states, I mean, that's glaringly obvious. So I want to apologize to these educators on behalf of the state of Florida and, know that you have my commitment. And I believe everyone's commitment up here to do better. And when I read the bill, and maybe Rep. Federhoff can address this in her close, I understand there are concerns about a cap, but I think would be hard-pressed to find any teacher in Florida, in the history of Florida, that ever received a 25% raise in 1 year. I don't look at that as a cap. I think this is a step to try to pay our experienced veteran teachers more. Admittedly, it does not go far enough, but I'm going to vote up on the bill and encourage my colleagues to do that because I think this does get us closer to trying to alleviate that pay shortage for our veteran experienced teachers. But unless I'm missing something, I see this as a step in the right direction. But again, admittedly, it doesn't go far enough, and I look forward to trying to work to do better next session. Thank you.
Representative Diamond in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very concerned about this bill. You know, I think that we have to be cognizant of the context in which that we are, in which we're discussing making changes to Florida law. And the context here, of course, is that we're coming out of a pandemic. It's been an incredibly stressful time for our teachers. Our teachers, in my opinion, are, we've all seen the articles about the growing shortages. We've heard some of the testimony today about people leaving the profession, the number of classrooms that are being combined. We got administrative staff teaching classes, classes getting canceled. It's a serious problem. And, I'm worried about this bill because I think that it's going to exacerbate that problem. The decision from the court case out of Orlando that this bill wants to reverse, I don't think is wrong. I mean, I'm just reading this, but, you know, it's similar to some of the testimony we heard here today. The teacher evaluation system goes right to the heart of some of these key issues that are negotiated between the union and the district in terms of wages, in terms of hours, terms and conditions of employment. And that's why this court decided that this is these are issues that should be part of the collective bargaining process. And I hope Representative Federhoff can address in the close, you know, I mean, her argument, as I heard it, is, well, that this might lead to an impasse. And you know, the reality is these are issues that are negotiated. I mean, these issues that impact wages and hours and terms and conditions of employment are issues that are negotiated between the union and the district. And so if there's an argument that the evaluation system is not connected to those, that's a different story. But we all understand that the evaluation system is directly connected to those issues. And so it's not just that the court said that the statute is silent on the matter. I mean, the court also said that these are all interrelated issues. So I don't think this decision is wrong. As I understand the purpose of collective bargaining, and given the context that we're deciding this or debating this bill, I think we should vote no on the bill, and I will be voting no for that reason. Thank you.
Representative Learned in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I couldn't agree with my Coast Guard friend here more about the need to pay our teachers better. I think we all agree on that. You know, and it's funny because, you know, Rep. Roach and I might be the only two sailors in the legislature, as far as I know. We're also obviously not lawyers, so I think we've both read this bill six different ways. I still don't understand how we're all getting there, but what I keep coming up with is there's essentially two ways of paying people. There's incentive and there's longevity. And what we're doing with this bill is we're saying that if you raise one, you got to raise the other. But really what that's doing is it's saying you're not raising longevity and paying our seasoned teachers any more than you're paying our new teachers. Because if you do want to raise pay for the longevity people, you got to raise it on the other side too. So while we all support raising all teachers' pay, we are preventing school boards from raising longevity more. And what you do from, you know, myself coming from the military where, you know, we have an incredibly lopsided pay scale where you have basically everybody does 4 years or they do 20. And it's because we create no off ramps along the way. And there's a cliff at 20 years. So nobody ever stays past that because we've created an incentive structure in our system. And that's exactly what I'm afraid this bill is creating in our teachers, which is, you know, what we all fear is that teachers start treating this like a job instead of a profession, and that teachers will come teach for a couple of months, and then they'll have no problem rolling halfway through a school year because they don't treat it like it's the profession where they're going to be coming back to this year after year, decade after decade, and that's where they're ultimately going to retire. You know, I would echo that we need to support our support staff. You know, I ran a bill for that, and we got crossing just this morning on my morning bike ride. One of our crossing guards in my neighborhood didn't show up, so we had parents trying to walk kids across the street, creating an unsafe environment. You got guidance counselors that are quitting in droves right now because of pay, and now we're creating an environment so that our teachers are going to be just as punished by, you know, not being able to negotiate their evaluations and being able to tie all that in. Because again, when we're going back to this pay structure, you got two sides, you got longevity and you got the performance, but now we're saying the teachers don't even get a seat at the table when it comes to the performance, because the performance is dictated by the evaluations that they're no longer allowed to collectively bargain on, which I don't understand how that's constitutional. And I certainly don't understand the logic of decoupling those two things when they're so intimately tied together. So I'm down on the bill. I would encourage everybody else to be down on the bill as well. And, you know, again, echo my friend, though, that we all do want to get to a place where we can pay our teachers a better wage here in Florida.
Representative Driscoll, Ranking Member Driscoll, on debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I was in an interview earlier today and someone asked me why it is that I got into the business of lawmaking. And I shared my story and personal background, that I'm a public school kid. My mom taught public school for over 35 years, and it really was to get here and to be an advocate for our public education system and for our teachers. Like Representative Grieco, though, I don't serve on any education committees, and so it is nice to have an opportunity to see an education bill in committee and not just on the floor. And I certainly appreciated Rep. Roach's comments about needing to pay teachers more. And I can appreciate Rep. Fetterhoff for bringing this bill. I think we oftentimes at the legislature, you know, try to solve problems and we may come about it from different perspectives. It just so happens that my perspective on this bill differs from the bill sponsor, although I can appreciate the goal and the intent. You know, I'll just, the question I have, you know, I just wonder to my colleagues, I guess I'll wonder aloud, you know, when are we going to do right by our teachers? Right? Like, when are we going to pay our teachers fairly? When are we going to increase salaries and not just give bonuses at times when it's convenient to do so? As I look at the bill and then I look at that decision that was in Orange County, as I understand that decision made by PERC, it was the school district and not the union that violated the law and created an unfair labor practice. But as I look at the text of the bill, it seems like it's very much attempting to punish the union and to punish the teachers that comprise its membership. My colleagues have provided a lot of excellent analysis, so I don't want to retread all of it, but I did just want to underscore, you know, if these procedures get to be unilaterally changed by the school district, then that is an unfair labor practice. And therefore, this needs to be subject to collective bargaining. Both the performance salary scale and the grandfathered salary scale are tied to annual performance evaluations. I don't know how you get around that. And when you exclude it from collective bargaining, it leaves out an important voice in ensuring that the process is fair and that there are practical measures put in place, and that is the voice of our teachers. I do thank everyone who came here to testify and who gave of their time. We know you have precious little time, that the time that you spend is not just, you know, when you have students there. You have papers to grade and administrative work to do, and so we appreciate you coming up and sharing your experience so we can take all of that into account. And as I take all of that into account and I weigh the text of the bill and I look at the prior ruling that was referenced in the bill analysis, I keep coming to the same conclusion, which is that this bill is not the best way to solve the problem that we really want to. And those problems are complicated by the fact that we do have a teacher shortage, that we do have wage compression. I think there are other ways that we can get to that beyond trying to be so restrictive of collective bargaining, which is really a very special and precious thing for employees to be able to have a pathway to share their feedback to management, you know, to the folks who are in charge, to the school district. So for those reasons, I'll be down on the bill today. Thank you.
Representative Alexander in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be very brief. You know, this process can have its ups and downs. It has its highlights, it has its frustrations. But one of the things that I firmly believe is that the education of our children, or the educating of our children, shouldn't be a political battleground. And I do believe that Representative Driscoll was correct. I don't think the intent of the bill sponsor is meant to be harmful in nature. It's just a methodology and approach that she believes that will improve the process. However, over the last 20 years, close to 20 years, there's been a concerted, targeted effort to dismantle public education in our state. To weaken it, and it's forced those to pick and choose what side they're going to be on. And I'm hoping eventually, as we have these conversations, just like we're talking about criminal justice issues, that we will stop saying it's this side against that side, this group against that group, John Kirtley over there, this group's over here, and we really sit down and we think about our babies. You know, there's no way you can go inside of a public education school or a school in general and see our children and not one desire to do the right thing. You know, my grandmother was a public school teacher for over 25 years in the Gaston County public school system. But it matters. we have to put our best foot forward. There's nothing more important that we're going to do in that regard. So, you know, I only have two more years in this process. Thank you, Jesus. But I will tell you this. Something has to give. You know, I'm sick and tired of the Twitter and the back and forth and the bombs being lobbed from the left and from the right. It just gets to a point where we're all adults. Let's sit down and have conversations about issues. And after we work on the issues, if you win the election, you win. If you don't, you don't. But let's still work together so that we can solve complex problems. Because you're going to look back. I'm going to stop you. You're going to look back 15, 20 years from now. You're going to ask yourself, what the heck did I do with my time in the Florida legislature? So instead of standing on the sideline, get on the field and ask yourself tough questions and have those tough conversations to deal with real issues that impact people. So I'm down on the bill, and I'm hoping as we move forward, we'll come up with clear, comprehensive solutions that can move our state forward and address this very critical issue.
Representative Federhoff, you're recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Chair. So I appreciate the questions. I appreciate the debate on this bill. I would like to say that there's nothing in this bill that prohibits unions or teachers being involved in this teacher evaluation process. There's nothing in there. It just says that they are not subject to collective bargaining. So teachers will still be involved in this evaluation process and fine-tuning it and making it better. So I wanted to make that clear. And it also doesn't prohibit longevity supplements. It just has to be factored into the calculations of the salary adjustments. It doesn't prohibit it. So I just want to clear up a couple of those things. I understand where you're coming from, but I really think that this is an issue that needs to be addressed before it becomes a statewide issue. It may just be one county right now, but I know that eventually, if it's successful here, it will wind up being in your backyard too, and I don't think that needs to be a factor that you want to be dealing with. So I would hope that you're up on the bill, and I appreciate your support. Thank you.
Representative Federoff, having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll.
Representatives Alexander.
No.
Beltran.
Yes.
Brannon.
Yes.
Bustada Cabrera.
Yeah.
Byrd. Diamond.
No.
Driscoll.
No.
Duggan.
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin.
Yes.
Federhoff.
Yes.
Gottlieb.
No.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Nope.
Hart?
No.
Learned?
No.
Plakin? Roach?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Chair Grawl?
Yes.
12 yeas, 7 nays, Madam Chair.
By your vote, the bill will be reported favorably. Finally, we will hear PCS for CS for HB 985 by Representative Beltran. Representative Beltran, you're recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Chair. The PCS for HB 985 deals with sovereign immunity. It increases the sovereign immunity cap per person to $400,000 from $200,000 and increases the per incident cap to $600,000 from $300,000. It allows settlements by local governments and other subdivisions of the state above the caps without further action by the legislature, without requiring a claims bill. It provides that victims of sexual abuse do not have any statute of limitations to make a claim, and thereby aligns our public entities with private entities in that regard. It would become effective October 1st, 2023, to allow a sufficient time for underwriting. And it would only apply to claims arising on or after that effective date. And I point out this bill, unlike previous versions, does not have the adjustment based upon the consumer price index, and it also does not eliminate the per incident cap. That is the bill, Chair.
Having explained the bill, members, are there questions? Representative Hart, any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, Rep, if you know where the League or cities or any of our counties are on this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I've had a lot of conversations with them. I have not heard from them since we did the committee substitute yesterday, so I don't want to speculate, and I at least see some of them here, so I'm sure they'll tell us.
Additional questions, members? Seeing No additional questions. We're in public testimony. William Large, Florida Justice Reform Institute, wave in opposition. David Cruz, Florida League of Cities, waves in opposition. Bob Harris, Panhandle Area Educational Consortium, waves in opposition. Mark Deligal, Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida, waves in opposition. Michael Beatty, City of Fort Walton Beach, is an opponent of the bill. Larry Benson is a proponent of the bill. Is Larry here? William Cotterall, Florida Justice Association, waves in support. Is that all of our public testimony? Would you like to hear from somebody?
Just wondering if anybody from the League of Cities was going to testify.
They all waived. I don't know if they're... there's time if somebody would like to speak, but...
If there's time, Madam Chair, I'd like to hear from the League as to their
position on the... If the League would like to... David Cruz, if you would like to come to the podium, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. David Cruz of the Florida League of Cities. Let me start off by thanking the sponsor of the bill. I think the amendment that... is before us today is certainly a big step in the right direction, and we've had a lot of conversation, and he's put in a lot of time and effort into this, and so we are very thankful for the moves that the bill has made from where it was initially filed. We do feel that the 400,000, 600,000 is a number that is too high for our cities. We feel that the Senate's version at this is something that we felt is more reasonable. Specifically, the Senate has taken a position to try to tier these impacts depending on populations of our government entities. So for cities with less than 50,000 and counties with less than 50,000 residents, they would be at 200,000, 300,000 current law, and then it would go up progressively depending on population. We felt that that was a solution that we would prefer over this solution, but we certainly recognize the sponsor of the bill for the movement that the bill did with this amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Members, we are in debate on the bill. Is there debate? Debate? Okay, seeing no debate, Representative Beltran, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you, Chair. This adjustment from 200 to 400 and from 300 to 600, it's less than any rational inflation adjustment that you could come up with from 2010 forward. We've done these calculations, and everyone came up and said that it should be more of an increase. I thought it should be more of an increase. I thought it should have been a lot more of an increase. If we were doing anything less in this bill, we would be doing nothing. And still, the same stakeholders who've come and asked me to bring the limits down again and again and again are still opposing this bill at 400,000, 600,000. And some of you, I'm not going to say who, and some of them aren't in the room and some of them are, have acknowledged to me privately, I'm not going to say who you are, but acknowledged to me privately that the limits need to go up. And the fact that they need to go up, whether it's the Senate bill or the House bill or some other number, no one's told me that they haven't had to go up. And this is really the least that we can do to increase it. It's going to be inadequate the first year out after we do this, because there's going to be inflation, and inflation's going up. It's not going down. We've taken out the CPI increase. And as for the suggestion that folks in smaller counties that you all represent, deserve less protection than those of us who live in larger municipalities or larger counties, I don't think that's the appropriate way to do it. Those smaller counties have smaller population, fewer government workers, fewer operations. Therefore, they have less exposure in their insurance premiums, which everyone's been complaining about the past 9 weeks or since whenever I filed this. Your premiums will be lower because you have less exposure. Because if you're insuring appropriately, and most of you do now, and most of you, I assume, will under whatever we enact, then you insure properly, then this is mostly going to be paid by insurance, at least at these very modest limits, which are not what they should be. It should be higher. But we've come down dramatically, and still everyone who's been against it is still against it. So I guess I ask for everyone's favorable support, but thank you.
Having closed on the bill, Lindsay, please call the roll.
Representatives Alexander?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Boussada Cabrera?
Yes.
Byrd? Diamond?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Larned?
Yes.
Plakin? Roach?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Trunell?
Yes.
Chair Grawl?
Yes.
19 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Members, by your vote, the bill will be reported favorably. I'd like to just take a couple minutes to make a few comments as this is our last meeting. First, if we can take a moment of silence maybe for HB 1525, which is the PIP no-fault repeal bill, which is not being heard in today's committee, and therefore I will not be able to present in the Florida House again after this year, so, but in the Florida House. So let's see. So just joking aside, I know there were some people sitting on the edge of their seats to see if that was going to show up on this final agenda, and it did not. First, I'd like to thank Speaker Sprouls for entrusting me in this position this year. It's truly been an honor to work with all of you, and just to be able to focus on this policy area and silo. It has been exciting. There are hard days. There are great days. I appreciate to the extent that you all allowed me to meddle in all of the policy that came through this silo, your patience with me in that, but hopefully you all understand I was only trying to ever make it better. And I think that we should all have that as our goal. I'd like to thank the Sergeant's Office for always being here, being, you know, not only in this room, but around the Capitol as we have these big conversations, and helping to bring calm to those conversations, and for your service to this House. I'd like to thank the judiciary staff, from our administrative staff, Lindsay Harrell, Lindsay Collins. They do a fantastic job. Our staff attorneys, Sarah Matthews, Candace Brascom, Caitlin Mon, Lindsay Frost, Ryan Padgett, and then, of course, my staff director, Trina Kramer, and then her policy chiefs, Jordan Jones and Whitney Hall. They were always engaged in the debate, always looking to make things better, and worked tirelessly during the 60 days and before on all members' projects and policy. And so really just been wonderful to work with them and our fellow, Kristen Petrozelli, who's been the fellow in the office this year. To my ranking member, Representative Driscoll, thank you for the conversations. Thank you for the friendship. Thank you to you and to everyone on this committee for making me a better lawyer, making me a better legislator, hopefully making me a better person. And to my vice chair, Representative Byrd, who's obviously not here, but started this process with, it's been an honor to serve with him, and Representative Duggan, Representative Brandon, Representative Gregory, you have just, you have all done such amazing things in your silo, in your committee, and in the way that you work with the members. And I just thank you very much for your engagement in always trying to do what's right for the citizens of Florida. So with that, I hope I didn't forget anybody, but thank you all very much for the last session. It's been a real honor and privilege to serve with you. Representative Hart has a good year.
Madam Chair, I just want to say thank you so much for helping me get a bill into the right posture to be able to get that bill out of committee. I've worked on it for 4 years in a row, and it is very difficult. And the fact that you were gracious enough to speak to me about it and have conversation after conversation, I appreciate that. And so did Rep. Brannon as we pushed forward. I just wish that we could have so much more camaraderie when it comes to bills that directly impact our people around the state of Florida. As I sit here, and this is my fourth year, my second year in judiciary, but you just sometimes feel like no matter how right it should be or how right it sounds, it's not. And when people come up to us and come in these committees and they speak their heart out, and then we have to just look at them and say, no, we know better. I just think that as we all continue to work in this legislature, that we learn to respect our people that we are here to represent and listen to them and better understand what they're going through. So I thank you so much for the opportunity to have served on this committee, and I look forward to 4 more years in the House.
Ranking Member Driscoll. Representative Alexander. Okay. Representative Alexander.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And as I look around the dais, there are only three of us here from our class, I believe, Representative Diamond, you and myself, and you and I have a very unique, special, close relationship in spite of what people may think. And we've had some amazing conversations over the years. And I'm just really proud of you, your growth, what you've done. You know, we know certain issues that we don't agree on, but I just want to continue to encourage our colleagues, especially when the new freshmen come in, really take the time to get to know your colleagues, regardless of what side of the aisle they're on. You can find out some fascinating things about them. I can still remember the gift you got my first child, the baby genius. My second child is using it right now. And the fact that I can remember that, that's kind of weird. But this is what it's all about, that we can agree to disagree. We can do it with civility. We can do it with respect. And then when we kind of cross the line and we may have those emotional moments, we can push the reset button and move forward. So job well done. Appreciate you. I know you have a very, very bright future. Look forward to seeing what you're going to do.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
As I think everybody's heard me give the speech that I'm a non-lawyer in this committee many times, and I somehow got put on every judiciary committee that exists. A couple months ago in committee week, we did a tort 101 course, and you promised me some credit hours to law school. I'm just wondering, do we get the sign today?
Think about it only if you stop saying, I'm not a lawyer.
Deal.
Because you, in fact, are making laws. So none of us should be able to say that, but I'll work on the credits. Ranking Member Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and what a pleasure it has been serving with you on this committee. I just want to thank you for always having an open door. I treasured our weekly meetings, and sometimes probably more than once a week. And I just thank you because I saw how hard you worked on these bills on behalf of every member of this committee and every member who had bills coming through your silo, regardless of which caucus they were in. And that is the measure of a true servant and the measure of a true leader. And I appreciate the way that you have comported yourself as chair. And it's been an honor just serving with you. And like Leader Alexander, I can't wait to see what you do. So thanks.
With that, members, that concludes the business of the committee. And if there is no further business, Representative Roach moves we adjourn. And without objection, the motion passes and we are adjourned.